You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 23rd, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Lincoln Chafee 2016 after party, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Beautiful downtown Providence, Rhode Island.
Don't forget the salad bar.
Yeah. We joined Lincoln Chafee and his four guests already in progress.
His four guests at the after party.
And he's just giving them their money back. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to take your money. Hey, dude, it was $30.
Yeah, listen.
You can keep it. Buy yourself something nice, you know?
Jamie at Crooks and Liars said, what? Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee dropping out the same week? It's the death of the Democratic Party.
The gypsy lady was right.
So as you can tell, we're recording this Friday morning.
Yeah.
I do not get 11 hours to prepare this show.
No.
So, unlike Mrs. Clinton, I don't get 11 hours.
No, we're going hot from
committee.
This show to the pressing of the vinyl and then releasing our album with very little editing because it's... But we had to.
We had to because...
Before
we get to Hillary Clinton and Benghazi...
We had to wait for Biden.
We have some quick housekeeping to do. I just want to say.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Next week, next Friday, October 30th, is Driftglass's birthday.
It is. It's my birthday.
That day, Friday, is Driftglass's birthday.
My birthday.
So happy birthday.
And I'm going to fundraise the hell out of it next week.
Yeah. Do you want to tell everyone how old you are?
Sure. I'm 55. I will be 55. 55.
55.
55.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I wouldn't. I'm happy
great.
With my.
I know.
I'm happy with
me
my.
Too.
Very
me
happy.
Too. It's like I would never go back to 25 again. Forget that.
No.
I also got an email this week from our podcast host, Buzzsprout, and they offered us a free month of podcast hosting to mention their company on the air. Now, here's the deal. We pay them $12 a month for the podcast hosting.
Yep.
So for me, that's not worth violating the integrity of the show to mention a company on the air for $12. I wouldn't do that.
Hey, Blue Gal.
However,
you just mentioned them.
However, so I'm not doing this for the money.
Right.
I just want you to know.
Right, exactly. There's, this is.
But here's the deal. We have been with Buzzsprout for a long time.
Yes, we have.
300 episodes.
Yep.
And they bend over backwards.
They do.
Customer service.
Anytime
I have had a problem with their system uploading the podcast, I send them a tweet and an email, and they get back to me within 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is when the show has to go up on Friday. It's got to go up. And they do not delay taking care of me if there's a problem. And I even had one time where it was just spinning, like it hung, their system hung when I was trying to post the podcast. And I emailed them, and I got an email back right away, and it just said, "We moved your show to the top of the queue." Okay.
And you could hear them in the background hitting the server with a hammer, knocking it loose. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
And look, I don't know if Buzzsprout is four guys in a garage or some swanky, Silicon Valley starter company. I have no idea who these guys are. I just know that they take care of us. And when we need help, they're there.
They're a very small subsidiary of Koch Industries.
Whatever. I have no clue.
Yeah. They do right by us.
But they do. And as customer service, I've had enough bad customer service in my life to know good customer service when I see it.
And you and I have both been in customer service.
We have. So we know what good customer service
looks like. They really work their ass off to make us happy. And they don't need to. We're not.
They get $12 a month from us.
Yeah.
We
don't have the throw weight of. Of other nationally syndicated podcasts.
Right.
So they do it because that's their business model, and we really appreciate
that. If anyone is interested in doing a podcast with Buzzsprout or trying podcasting, number one, let me know.
Yeah.
Number two, buzzsprout.com/50 will give you half off your first month of podcasting. So they do take care of their customers.
So
that's all I have to say about
that. So keep your damn $12, Buzzsprout.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like, I mean, I really do like the fact there are podcasts we like and admire and some we listen to every week and some we listen to once in a great while. Mm-hmm. But almost everybody has gone to a subscriber model, a paywall model, mm-hmm. a premium model, right. or are really cluttered necessarily so with ads.
Yeah, just to keep it going.
You know,
yeah,
ads at the beginning, right. ads in the middle, and this section is sponsored by, and that's fine. You gotta pay your bills together.
Yep.
But I'm kind of, and maybe we can't do that forever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of proud of the fact that we are entirely user funded.
Yeah, we are.
People who listen to us are the people who buy stuff on Amazon
yep. and send us money, and that's what they do. Yeah, and that's our model for now, except when we get sponsored by the Ron Swanson face rubber stamp that I got you for your birthday.
She did. She did. It's so awesome.
I linked it at our Facebook page. So I put up a picture of it on our Facebook page.
I don't.
It is Ron Swanson's face on a rubber stamp.
And you know what? And here's, I think I mentioned this before. Tina Fey
yeah.
and her partner, Amy Poehler,
yeah.
have invented two of the greatest capitalists on television history.
Yeah,
Alec Baldwin playing Jack Donaghy and Ron Swanson, because they don't insult them. They don't. They're no more insulted than every other character in the comedy.
They're fully formed characters who feel this way, genuinely feel this way.
I mean, I know people like Ron Swanson. But what really gives that character heart? Is at the end of the day, he will stand with a person he disagrees with completely because they're just a good person and what they do is actually important.
Yep.
And he will violate his own rigid dogma in order to do the right thing by his friend who's trying to do the right thing by the people who work for her and the people she serves. And that is a very touching and beautiful model, especially for someone who's worked in and around government before.
Yep. It brings humanity to the show. It does.
It really does.
Hey, I want to congratulate you, Driftglass. You win. You win. Live blogging the Benghazi Committee 11-hour fun fest.
Uh-huh.
And you made dinner last night. That all of that together is just
I picked up,
awesome.
I picked up a kid or two and made dinner. And I will admit I filled a lot of Coke bottles with urine. During
I was going to say, you also mentioned that the big loser of the night was Trey Gowdy's dry cleaning.
Yeah, I'm sorry, sir, but... Urine and sweat stains this bad will never come out. Ever. They're like your friggin' stigmata. You
throw away the suit, Trey Gowdy. It's over. Yeah, you need a new one.
I'm rather proud of it. I didn't intend to do this. I intended to watch and take notes, and I just started like, wow. I used to do this back before I had cable television.
Yeah.
Before I wanted cable television. On Sunday mornings, I still do my Sunday morning coming down thing pretty much every week.
Before your wife started dragging you to church.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that, you were in the castle by yourself with your cats and you had nothing to do on a Sunday morning.
Nothing. I had nothing going for me. No, and I would do that as a public service. And I would watch and sort of comedically transcribe what people were saying and doing. And now it's much more, I go to the transcripts or I know people who are dear friends of mine or people I'm married to. Who will get me a transcript when I need one, and I can cruise through it. I can watch the reruns. Crooks and Liars.
Yeah, and we rely on Crooks and Liars
heavily, because they always have the sweet meat. And so I still perform that service, but I used to do that. Watch and literally flip back and forth between channels and transcribe. And this, I had no intention of doing that again, but it was friggin' mesmerizing. It was awesome.
It was two different worlds colliding.
It really was.
The real world and the Fox News world, or the... a lot of people said Breitbart.com's comment section was on display here. Yeah.
It totally was. And I will say this is a little bit off track, but I was reminded of a scene from The Hustler where Fast Eddie Felsen has been dying to beat Minnesota Fats.
Yeah.
Played by the inimitable Jack Gleason and Paul Newman.
Right.
And he, it's not enough to just win. He has to beat him. Mm-hmm. He has to beat him to the point where Fats says uncle and says, you're the greatest pool player ever, Eddie, and gives up. That nothing short of that will do. And they've been playing all night long. And Eddie's winning. Eddie's up like $11,000. Eddie's up a lot of money. And like, okay, it's over. And Eddie says, no, it's not over until Fats says it's over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And George C. Scott looks at him and said, keep playing him. This kid's a loser.
Mm.
And Jackie Gleason goes into the bathroom. They've been up all night, and some drinking's been going on, and Eddie looks just terrible. His shirt's open, he's sweaty, and so but he's ready to go. And Gleason goes into the bathroom, splashes some water on his face, puts a new flower in his lapel, powders his hands, and comes.
And he's refreshed.
Fresh as a daisy, ready to go another 24 hours. And that's what it was like yesterday. The committee started off like Eddie Felsen ended. They were, I mean, this should never have happened.
Right.
This is one of those cases. This is like Mitt Romney's gaffe that creamed him in the debates.
Yep.
Blown up to 11 hours long with no end in sight. And the only person with the off switch was Trey Gowdy, and he couldn't turn it off.
Yeah.
He was charged with essentially validating every crackpot, wingnut conspiracy theory that every one of his constituents believe like the friggin' gospel.
Yep.
Every Republican on that panel was charged by their constituents and by the Republican Party with going and proving something that was patently ridiculous. And they should never have gotten in the room with her. They should never have stepped in the ring with her. She beat them like a rented mule. A 67-year-old lady beat up seven Republicans for 11 hours and dabbed the sweat away from her upper lip and walked away.
And, you know, the reason – I want to get to the reason this committee exists.
Yep.
Apparently, it was supposed – people have forgotten so much of recent history about this committee.
Mm-hmm.
Boehner didn't want to do this because Daryl Issa's committee was such a flop.
Yep.
And everyone knew it. Everyone knew it was awful and it was not helping. And so, but they couldn't stop because the Breitbart comments section didn't want them to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the excuse of these emails was the reason to go on, but those didn't have anything to do with the four dead people in Benghazi.
Nothing
at all.
Nothing had anything to do. And Daryl Issa, bless his heart, I believe it was Elijah Cummings, who brought along with him the clip of Daryl Issa lying through his teeth about the stand down order. And it's like, you know, this was, and I wrote in my summary, remember several hearings ago when Daryl Issa lied his ass off about this? Let's go to the clip, shall we? And here's the thing. It was so bad from the very beginning because every Republican, all they were doing was literally pulling comments from Hot Air and Breitbart
Red State
Powerline and reading them as if they were fat and going, don't you admit that you hate America and that you and Sidney Blumenthal were sleeping together and he's been to your house. And all the Democrats had to do was point to these people and say, look how absurd they are. Look what children these people are. Look what crazy batshit assholes these are. They've pissed away your money, $20 million on seven hearings so far. And now here we are.
And they're doubling down this morning.
Yep.
All the Republican committee members are saying, four dead Americans, it's worth any amount of money to get justice for four dead Americans. They don't care about the 30 dead Americans that died under Bush.
No. Well, and that was the other thing.
They don't care about the hundreds under Reagan.
And this is
under terrorist attacks, which is a tragedy. It's horrible that terrorists were able to kill Americans overseas who were there for diplomatic purposes.
Well, and I hate
or military purposes or whatever.
I hate to put it this crassly, but like after 9/11, Republicans will use dead Americans every single time to advance their fucking awful agenda.
Mm-hmm.
They will hide behind dead Americans to snipe at liberals and trash their political opponents because they're scumbags.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what scumbags do. And the problem they had, and this was where Elijah Cummings was right and Adam Schiff was wrong. Adam Schiff said, look, I was the one who said we shouldn't participate in this committee. Elijah was right. He needed to stay here because they kept bringing up, what about all the other attacks? Where was your indignation then? What about the history of bipartisanship going back to the to Reagan getting hundreds of Marines killed in Beirut? This is an obscenity. Of course we should have a hearing. We had one hearing here. We had zero hearings here. We had zero hearings here. We had one here. And now we've had eight for this, in comparison to all the other tragedies, a relatively minor occurrence. And we, all of the questions you've asked have nothing to do with what happened anyway. And Elijah Cummings brilliantly said, look, you people have obsessed over Sidney Blumenthal.
Yeah.
And you have leaked. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
You have leaked selective transcripts, selective emails from Sidney Blumenthal for the express purpose of trashing Hillary Clinton. That's what this is all about. You are you and your friggin' House Majority Leader said so. So why the hell are we here? And Republicans, this is what happens every time you get into an argument with a conservative. They just hunker down and keep repeating the talking points and hope you'll go away because they look like the lying scumbag traitors that they are. And there was no place for them to run. And I think they thought they were winning because they kept repeating these insane, long debunked talking points. And the Democrats just could say, look, this has already been answered. Or look, if you really you have this fetish for Sidney Blumenthal, a relatively minor character.
Which is veiled anti-Semitism, by the way. Totally. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, and Elijah Cummings said, fine, here's an easy way to solve the problem. You've been leaking this shit to destroy Hillary Clinton all along. Why don't you just release his entire transcript?
Yeah, just let all of it out.
And the reason you don't want to do that is because you said this is about four dead Americans and a breakdown in security in Benghazi. You spent the entire goddamn hearing when Sidney Blumenthal was behind closed doors talking about what? Media Matters, the Clinton Foundation, and his work history. Yep. You don't give a shit about dead Americans. Republicans don't give a shit about what happened in Benghazi. And the fact that they are once again using dead people to hide the fact that they are morally depraved blew up in their face.
Well, and this is why I'm gonna shift gears for just a minute.
Please.
This is why Joe Biden was completely wrong in saying the Republicans aren't our enemy. They're the opposition. They're not the enemy.
No, they're the
enemy. If you're Hillary Clinton, they're the fucking enemy because they will do this. They will reduce themselves to going after your Christmas card list and your friendships on email to make you look like a criminal. And really, the number of times that the prosecutorial tone of these assholes was, you killed him with your vagina.
Right.
You did.
Right.
You were right outside the Benghazi stink hole that you didn't want to protect. You had a gun, and you shot those four people. You might as well have shot them. And after they died, you didn't even care.
Admit it.
Yeah.
You overthrew the Gaddafi regime to advance your petty political career.
Just to win. Presidency.
Imagine you are an ordinary, normal human being. And you have to sit for 11 hours and listen to people who work for Satan, who are clearly and explicitly lying, who are trying desperately to find the most vicious and insulting and duplicitous and awful thing to say to make you flinch so that then they can get that on camera and then it can go on Fox News forever because that's the next talking point. Did you see how we made her cry? And imagine having to sit through that and be calm and collected and professional for more hours in a row than every other witness has been questioned collectively.
Not only calm and collected, Driftglass, presidential.
Yep.
This was a bad day for us Bernie fans. It really was.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I am going to vote Bernie in the primaries. Definitely. I'm a decided voter. But this was a bad day for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And I said on Twitter more than once, why doesn't Bernie get equal time to look this presidential and this in control and this professional as a government functionary?
I'm sure he could.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, he could.
I'm sure.
Well, and I said, why, you know, if Jim Webb had sent a Benghazi email to Hillary at home, he wouldn't have had to kill that commie Viet Cong guy with his bare hands.
Right. That's the problem. That's the problem. And
poor Lincoln Chafee didn't get his hour in the sun either.
No.
11 hours in the sun.
And
this was a good day for her politically.
It was.
And that's the opposite of what they wanted to have.
These are all unforced errors by children who do not understand how politics works or how the world works or how the State Department works, who are answerable only to the lowest common denominator on the Breitbart comment thread, because those are their voters.
And speaking of that, I want to congratulate you, Driftglass, big time.
Yes.
For calling it exactly right on Bill Kristol.
Oh, I have one more thing to add.
Yeah, go ahead.
It just occurred to me what the title of my post that I'm going to write while you're editing this.
Yes.
The 23rd Psalm.
Oh.
Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies.
Yep. And my cup runneth over.
And I got to say, these people are the enemies of this country. Don't doubt it for a minute.
Oh. And that's what I said, too, was this no schadenfreude about this. Mm-hmm. These are the enemies of democracy. I want them out. I'm not giggling about this to say, ha, 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 you got burned by your own candle. No, you are hurting this country. Yep. You are hurting our democracy.
And you're taking delight in doing it.
Yeah.
You like.
Yeah.
And can I read you two quick paragraphs? I promise they're just.
And then you're going to talk about Bill Kristol, right?
I am. But
okay.
To illustrate my point.
Remember, this isn't edited.
I know.
It's just live. So.
And I'm running on a battery, so I have to talk really fast. let me read you something I wrote. The idea is actually so painfully prima facie absurd that it no more merits refutation than does flat earthery. It's kind of funny to see what happens when the malformed little homunculi who live inside the fart-breathing GOP bell jar try to catapult their house organ lunacy into the outside world. Such remarks do have the salutary effect of accidentally setting off a million candle power magnesium flare smack in the middle of their own camp. Suddenly, bright as day, you can clearly see what squirmy little monsters they are. You can really do little but shake your head in sad wonder that what once may have been considered the best and brightest are now such craven, lumpen fucktards. I wrote that in 2005 about the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Because Benghazi is Whitewater, and Whitewater is WMD, and WMD is birtherism, and birtherism is death panels, and on and on and mm-hmm. on and mm-hmm. on and on. Mm-hmm. These people live in a complete house of mirrors composed of nothing but their own bullshit and lies, and the people who they elect are just as bad or worse than they are. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to get rid of them other than to destroy the center of American politics, to take down their enabling. These people are never going to stop believing this shit. I guarantee you at least half of Trey Gowdy's voters still believe mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton murdered Vince Foster. I would guarantee you that.
Yeah.
So they never give up because they never leave the Fox News rat hole.
Dave Weigel on Twitter posted a link to the New York Times article in 2004 explaining that George W. Bush was going to limit his testimony before the 9/11 panel to 1 hour.
Right.
And Cheney didn't want him to do that.
Yep.
So, and I really liked what Vegas Jesse had to say about this. She said, the only way it's possible to get away with 11 hours yesterday and not remember 1 hour in 2004 is a complicit media.
And remember, that 1 hour, as I recall, was Bush and Cheney testifying together so they could check each other in mm-hmm. private with no notes taken.
No cameras and no notes. Yep.
Because that's what happens when you're a Republican. You can actually mm-hmm. sleep through the worst terrorist attack in American history and fly your friends from the Saudi family out of the country mm-hmm. as the only plane that was flying that day. And you can get away with that level of murderous incompetence. And your friends in the Congress will let you testify in private, and the media will just let the water close over it.
Well, this is what Dick Cheney learned from Watergate.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is you do create that imperial presidency when you're a Republican.
Yep.
And that's it. And the rest of the time, it's no holds barred. We get to investigate everything.
Yeah.
All right.
You were going to.
You called it right on Bill Kristol.
I did.
Now, this is not about Benghazi.
No.
It could be. Bill Kristol announced to the world that Joe Biden was going to run for president.
Yep.
And he's going to announce it at the University of Delaware. And it's a done deal.
Done deal. Done deal.
He did that the day before Biden announced from the Rose Garden that he was not going to run.
Right. Yep.
And you called it. You said Bill Kristol will be pilloried by Rachel Maddow tonight and be on Morning Joe tomorrow.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened.
And lo and behold, he was pilloried on Rachel Maddow and invited as an honored guest onto the same network 10 hours later on Morning Joe. And treated like a wise old uncle who gets things wrong occasionally, but you know you can still trust his opinion. And again,
and speaking of Morning Joe, I'm gonna move the show along if you don't mind.
Oh no, I was only gonna add if anyone can ever find anything out about the media ever,
for Driftglass, his birthday,
find out who it is that keeps getting Bill Kristol a job in the media. What the hell does he have on what?
Which dead hooker does he have in his trunk?
Because that example is so far outside of the bell curve of even the crappiest Beltway journalist. Mm-hmm. It's so glaringly obvious that he has some hold on people, that he has some blackmail on people, that he has some filth on people, or that he's fucking Phil Griffin in the green room. I mean, he gives the best blowjob in town. I don't know what the deal is, but there is no reason on earth why Bill Kristol has a job on television at all anywhere. And
just on the face
there,
of it. Yeah,
ergo, there's no possible explanation other than he is either screwed
bribing
by
people, maybe?
Bribing the right people, or has dirt on the right people, or is in some secret cabal with people.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know the details one of these days and not have to wait till I go to heaven to find out.
I did want to say one thing about Joe Biden, or a couple things about Joe Biden. The accolades from the village because he made an inevitable decision were really self-congratulatory and annoying to me. That you talk about how great Joe Biden is because you're really saying, look, one of our cocktail party types did the right thing. And the other thing that wasn't mentioned, and maybe it's because they don't want to say something that might be hurtful to Biden. And I certainly don't want to say anything that's hurtful to Biden. I'm glad he's not running.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy for Joe Biden is not that he missed his chance to be president. The tragedy for Joe Biden is that Beau Biden missed his chance to be a candidate for president.
Yep.
And not that I can't predict that I would have supported Beau Biden for president, but clearly he was on that track.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that part of the emotional sense of loss, I mean, it's a tremendous sense of loss to lose a child. I know that personally, and it's a big deal. But the potential that was lost with the loss of Beau was huge, and for the country,
mm-hmm.
and for the political scene in the Democratic Party. So I'm sure Joe Biden was pulled, in the sense of running for Beau, and I'm glad he made the decision he made, but I didn't like the self-congratulatory tone that was there with all of the villagers they had on that day. David Brooks is back on the reservation.
Yeah, 100%. Back on the res after that.
And let me describe the scene. We have the blogger bed in our room, basically. Drift glass, and I have a king-size bed, TV, your computer, my phone. And it's sort of this is where we do our planning and so forth.
And this is also kids central, so it's the
kids. Oh, kids are in
every surface is a working surface in this.
Yes, in this house, in this tiny little house. But I'm waking up this morning, and you're sitting at your laptop watching Morning Joe, which is not something I want to wake up.
And
to
I don't
every day.
Do. I usually don't. I boycott that show. I catch the Twitter stream.
Yeah,
every now and then
we read the hate tweets.
Yeah.
But you said to me as I was waking up, you said, would you like to predict what David Brooks wrote about today?
Yeah.
And I rolled over and I said,
no.
No, I said, 10 uses for pumpkin that aren't pie.
Yeah.
And you said, you are so close.
You're surprisingly close. Yes. David. after Paul Ryan is taken hostage by the
Freedom Caucus.
Or the Freedom
and
Caucus.
Hillary Clinton wins the day.
And Hillary Clinton just beats them in a 15-round night.
David Brooks is going to write about anything but Washington.
And Joe Biden steps aside.
Yep.
And of course, Lincoln Chaby drops out.
Well, that was later.
Well, no.
I think that was this morning.
I think David Brooks has such good sources that he would have known that Lincoln Chaby was going to drop out yesterday. I don't know. Maybe that was one of his 9 contributors. I really don't know. But David Brooks brags in a humble, humble way that basically he knows everybody and has sources all over Washington. And that's why you can trust him, because when he says high place sources tell me that what Lincoln Chaby, you can take it to the bank. That's half of his cachet. So this is one of the most sort of consequential weeks in politics and in political culture. In exposing exactly what liberals have been saying for decades, that the Republican Party is no longer a political party. It is a madhouse run by lunatics for the to please bigots and the billionaires who own them. That's it. That's all it is. It's not a political party anymore. So David Brooks decided today he would write about Lady Gaga and how to live a life of passion. And
he wrote about Lady Gaga, ladies and gentlemen.
I think he's angling for that Huffington Post lifestyle,
BuzzFeed, sleep, yes,
therapy, aromatherapy, are you in touch with your inner child columnist kind of thing, because he really just is losing it. I think the divorce is only catching up with him. Or maybe he's, you know, maybe he's got a co-ed on the side. He's trying to impress that he knows who Lady Gaga is. So
yeah,
he's right.
Yeah.
But really, in the middle of this shitstorm, political shitstorm,
he's writing about Lady Gaga.
He's writing about Lady Gaga and the importance of living your life with passion.
Well, and then I noticed looking over your shoulder that Morning Joe had, you know, John Kasich on from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
La, 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 la. Nothing happened yesterday to talk about. La, 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 la. So,
but no,
this is
earlier.
This is how the Republican Village deals with a defeat, is it didn't happen.
Never happened. It didn't happen. And literally a week and a half after Mr. Brooks broke down weeping at the op-ed page of the New York Times, said the Republican Party is insane. They're a bunch of lunatics. They're ruining the country. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. It's so bad. It's so fucking bad. And he was sent away to the nervous hospital.
I was going to say somebody gave him a hypodermic in the neck.
Yeah. And took him away to the nervous hospital for the the temporarily forthright.
Right.
And
yes.
And let him rest for a while.
For the temporarily forthright.
And they let him sleep for a while, sleep it off. And, you know, and by Jiminy, a week later, he has a long column about how both sides are really the problem. And it's really the universal, everything's bad all over the place. But, you know, the Republicans can't govern because it's marginal members. I'm quoting now. Those at the edge burn with conviction. Jeb Bush looks wan, but Donald Trump radiates confidence. Next line. The Democratic establishment no longer determines party positions. It's pulled along by formerly marginal players like Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And then
both sides.
And then he launches into the big loss of central confidence is in global governance. The U.S. is no longer willing to occupy the commanding heights and oversee global order. David Brooks is arguing for global hegemony. David Brooks wants a nice, oligarchic, fascist world order with the – and this is exactly what he and his buddy Bill Kristol, for whom he used to write about in the 90s.
The new American century. That's what this is. Yep. We're going to rule the ocean.
And he specifically –
run the Middle East.
He specifically –
run Europe.
He specifically asks for the return of a charismatic and persuasive leader who could master the moment and understand the lessons of the last 15 years and – be more realistic about the depravity and barbarism in the world.
He can suck my dick.
And,
he really can.
And what I wrote to Mr. Brooks, who has thus far never returned any of my letters ever, is that Mr. Brooks, we might have had such a leader. Too bad he happened to be black and have a after his name. And that instead of helping him govern, your party of hysterical bigots, imbeciles, lunatics, and demagogues spent the last 7 years working tirelessly to destroy him and burn the very concept of competent self-governance to the ground.
Right.
And again, that is what David Brooks himself wrote a week ago. But it is so unacceptable, so psychologically impossible for the people who suck, who the parasites, who feed off of this both-siderist bullshit, who feed off of lying to you every day that the Republican Party really isn't as bad as it clearly is on television for 12 hours in a row. They can't admit it. So they haul in some douchebag like David Brooks or Ron Fournier or Harold Ford Jr. or Morning Joe to paper over it every goddamn day. And now
I'm going to put my feminist crown on,
please,
Rick Glass, and talk to the women listeners of this podcast.
Yes.
Girls, I got to tell you, the optics of yesterday and the optics of Planned Parenthood hearings, which, by the way, the Washington Times reports this morning that John Boehner has created a new select investigative panel that's going to probe abortion providers like Planned Parenthood.
Can we just put them together and call it the Planned Blumenthal Committee? Because and I just want to remind people, before the Hillary Clinton comprehensive beatdown of Republicans happened yesterday, the last comprehensive beatdown of Republicans was Cecile Richards.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. And asking Cecile Richards about her salary,
yep,
and asking Hillary Clinton about her personal relationships and friendships and emails that had nothing to do with the task at hand. This does not hold water with us. This just doesn't. Boehner says, and this is same shit, different day. At my request, three House committees have been investigating the abortion business, but we still don't have the full truth.
Well,
so we need a select panel chaired by your favorite and mine, Marsha Blackburn.
Oh, God.
So we're going to have 10 years of this shit.
Yeah, of course we are.
And to add to that, the Paul Ryan needing more family time.
Yeah. Oh, that was rare.
And winning a Lean In Award from Sheryl Sandberg because, you know, he is modeling the right behavior for people who need more family time.
That's right.
And it goes right along with Micah Brzezinski's, you know your worth. This is only for women of a certain class who can afford to ask for more money in the boardroom.
Right.
And if that same woman leaves her Lean In book on the nightstand and her nanny picks it up and says, yes, I'd like more money, fuck that shit.
You're fired.
You're fired. Yeah. So this is for a class of people like Paul Ryan, like Sheryl Sandberg, like Micah Brzezinski, who get to know their worth. And the rest of us can go, you know, whatever.
Or?
I'm done with these people.
Like Lady Gaga.
Or like Lady Gaga, who needs more time. Right. You know, she needs a work-life balance.
Well, you need to live your life with passion and take bold risks. Unless, of course, you work for a living. In which case, that bold risk lands you on the unemployment line.
If you have three jobs to keep a roof over your head, then no. Yep. Right, right. One last thing, Driftglass. Donald Trump is keeping Jeb Bush safe from becoming president.
Yeah.
And this goes back to that rewriting history. All of a sudden, we have to re-legislate 9/11.
Oh.
And Republicans are discovering that Barack Obama wasn't president on 9/11, and neither was Bill Clinton.
Yeah, in a shocking expose. Someone got out a calendar and pointed to George Bush's inauguration date and then flipped over a year and pointed to 9/11 and said he was president when that happened. And that saying that out loud is heresy.
Is heresy.
And that's how down deep the Orwellian hole the right has fallen. We're pointing to the calendar is fucking heresy.
When
mentioning that Barack Obama, you know, the history existed before 2009 is heresy. And Donald Trump, bless his heart, is rampaging through that party like a bull in a bullshit shop, knocking everything down. And there's no way to shut him. I mean, the cameras, liberals, he's saying things every now and then that liberals have been saying for years.
Yep.
And liberals cannot beg, borrow, or steal time on national television to say any of this stuff because it's absolutely against the rules. Donald Trump can say it, though, and has said it. Now, the good news is, Donald Trump has fallen to second in Iowa. The bad news is he's losing to Ben Carson. I think it was Charlie Pierce who said, you know, he's worried that someday Ben Carson's just going to see a pretty bird and follow it into the forest and never come back.
Because he drank too much cough syrup.
He's just nuts. He's just kind of a flady. But, you know, he's a dyed-in-the-wool, evangelical, America-loving, ignorant as a bag of hammer Christian who knows that a lot of things, doesn't know the difference between Afghanistan and Iraq or anything like that. That's not important, but knows Jesus loves Republicans. And
well, and that's just the Republicans who want to say that they're for somebody in Iowa. 72% of Republicans in Iowa haven't made up their mind yet. So.
Well, and Rick Santorum won Iowa. Okay.
So, yeah, come on.
It's Iowa.
Huckabee won Iowa.
Iowa. So. But that's the Republican Party. The 50-something percent of the Republican voters are now essentially locked into, if the election were held tomorrow, voting for someone who's never held office before and who is demonstrably insane.
Because it's evangelicals, and that's it. And they vote for exactly who the most evangelical candidate is, regardless of whether they're crazy or not. So
Carly Fiorina. She's still there. But yeah, it is.
Well, Carly Fiorina isn't still there. Carly Fiorina is really not doing well because she didn't realize that compulsive lying might catch her that one time.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Zoe. Zoe is sitting in her cardboard box, and you may take a picture of her, but she will stay in her box for this picture. Thank you very much. We have cats like that.
We do.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. We did get a letter this week from someone talking about the stupid, evil, and crazy game.
And we were going to, but you know what happened?
We were going to, but then a lot of other shit happened.
Yeah. So maybe
next week we have another Republican debate coming up. Donald Trump can't speak for 3 hours, but Hillary Clinton can speak for 11. So
yeah.
There's that.
Yeah. Well, and Donald Trump got to dictate the terms of the next debate.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
Yeah. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Don't forget, Driftglass's birthday is next week, so send $3!
And I will, as I said before, I will be fundraising the hell out of it for the next week or so.
Over at his blog, yep. driftglass.blogspot.com. Go over there and read his live blog of the Clinton testimony. It's hilarious.
It's pretty good, I gotta say.
Don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We are so grateful people who are shopping Amazon, buying stuff they would already buy, mm-hmm. using our Amazon link. It is bringing money into our house, and it's money that we can use. So we've actually got a roofer looking at our roof.
Yeah.
And that's going to be expensive. So you are literally putting a roof over our heads.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. By shopping our Amazon link. We do believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a financial contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details, both our PayPal and postal address. Information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties want to know how Trey Gowdy could run a $5 million fishing expedition and there's no damn fish.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogfaced Herman. He has some knockoff movies. Oh, God. These are movies that are usually bad remakes of other movies or rip-offs of other movies. I think we've done this before, but these are special. He wanted me to tell you that the best knockoffs come from Turkey, but none of these movies are dubbed in English. So it would be hard for us to run Turkish clips on the podcast. Although I think that would be a cool podcast, Turkish clips.
Turkish clips of bad science fiction knockoffs. I think... Our future is there, Blue Gal. This politics thing is just getting old.
Dr. Sherman says, too bad. The Turkish Star Wars is something to behold. I have seen that. It is something to behold. The Turkish Spider-Man is beyond description. In it, Captain America teams up with El Santo.
El Santo.
El Santo. To fight Spider-Man, who runs an international drug cartel.
So more realistic and gritty.
Right. It's more realistic and gritty than the actual Spider-Man. So let's try these and see if you can get some of these bad knockoffs and then tell us which movie they're knocking off as well.
Okay.
Right. Number one.
Here's the nerve center of the entire operation.
This is unbelievable. Fantastic. Pre-programmed computers. They could run forever.
All these power modules, what are they for?
This is the force that projected the red monsters into space.
Then this is the way they produced real monsters?
No, not real. The monsters never existed. These machines discharge metal projections of monsters in our brains.
Incredible. Images of monsters designed to drive men insane with fear. With this kind of weapon, Count Zarth Arn can take over the entire galaxy.
But why didn't they finish us off? When the red monsters were attacking us, suddenly they disappeared.
This machine controls how long the attack will last. It's all done automatically. Programmed for a certain amount of time. Usually the amount of time is enough to drive most people insane. But we're not like most people. There's the control panel.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm gonna go with possibly ripping off the Forbidden Planet. That be even close?
You know, that's what I thought. It does sound like it's ripping off Forbidden Planet. Doc Beasterman says it's ripping off Star Wars.
Oh, well, okay.
This is Star Crash from 1978.
Sure. Why wouldn't it be? As long as it doesn't have Ewoks in it, I'm okay.
Right.
I think, you know.
You know what this one? This doesn't have Ewoks, but it does have David Hasselhoff in it.
Yeah. So that's, David Hasselhoff is the knockoff version of Jar Jar Binks. So, yeah. Big in Germany. Very big in Germany.
Very big in Germany.
All right.
Number two.
The first examinations all show the same results. This is not an egg, but an intensive culture of unknown bacteria. Pathogenous, perhaps, but definitely deadly.
Artificial?
I still don't know. But what we might define as the egg's yolk is a preset maturization culture. It reacts to heat. When the temperature is raised, it undergoes a cell mutation and becomes deadly.
How?
Come over here. Now watch. As you can see, I am extracting a sample of the substance from the interior of the egg.
What is that stuff?
That stuff's what caused those deaths, right?
Right. It's 100% active. Now watch. I am now going to inject some of the fluid into this white rat. Now all we have to do is wait. It takes effect almost immediately.
Once again, I'm pretty sure I have never seen this movie, although the actors' voices sound really familiar. I'm guessing something. Okay, we have an egg, mm-hmm. and we have explodey things and acid. So either it's a long weekend with drip glass in the 70s, or they're ripping off at least one of the Alien franchise.
It's an Alien. Ripoff, okay. And it's called Contamination.
Oh, that's nice.
From 1980. All right, number three.
Is it Contam-Nation?
No.
Or, okay. All right. That would have been my editorial
choice. That's because you weren't writing on that movie. That's right.
Clearly, okay. I was not writing on this movie. Yes.
Number three.
So how's Tom?
It was a fatal wound. He's dead.
Since Tom's dead, I want to make use of his body to create an android-like robot, Mr. Glenn. I would appreciate your approving my application.
Are you assured of success?
Mm-hmm.
All right, your application's approved. May I remind you of one point? You must proceed with your invention with great care and in strict confidence. All right?
Yes, all right.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Reanimating monsters. I'm guessing. Jesus, I don't know. Frankenstein jumps to mind, but everybody rips off Frankenstein.
Actually, this one is a ripoff of RoboCop.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No.
It is. It's a ripoff of RoboCop. It's called Robo Vampire.
Of course it is. I,
and here's the deal. Here's the deal.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have a robo vampire in it.
Oh.
It has a RoboCop versus vampires.
Oh, so.
There is no cyborg vampire in the champagne room.
Oh, crap. Well, I'll bet you what it does have is the exact same font as RoboCop.
Sure it does. That 70s science fiction font is just.
Yeah. And there's a lady cop showing her cleavage, and there's I bet.
With big hair.
Yeah, because as you're going by looking for the VHS tape you'll be taking home for the weekend, you might not notice that this is not RoboCop.
Because you're hot.
And then you get it home and go,
Ah, screw it. Whatever, man.
Whatever, man. I need some Doritos.
It's
all right.
I don't want to. It's cold out. It's good. And I have to wait 20 years for Netflix to be invented. So
yeah, okay.
Screw it. All right.
Number four.
We got to burn them out before they get a chance to burn us out.
You got to be kidding. You got your gray matter in your butt. Yoga picks up the telephone and calls his pals. It's our ass.
Hey, that. It's trash.
See, Ann? The zombies caught her.
And it's war. I trust, Trash, that this has finally made you see things clear. You got one option, war against the tigers.
I ain't talking options. My plan is to visit the ogre.
Talk to the ogre? Are you out of your fucking mind, man?
Shut your mouth and listen, asshole. I think those Manhattan big shots are trying to trap us because of Ann. We could never take them on alone. We need allies. And that means every writer in the Bronx. And only the ogre could deliver them.
How the hell are you going to get to the ogre alone? You realize that's no man's land? You got to get through the territories of the jackals, the scavengers, the sharks.
Blade's right, Trish. You'd never make it alone.
Then I'll have to bring some men with me.
Oh, Jesus. This is two movies. This is two separate movies. If I had to pick, it's not one, but there was a movie called Warriors.
Warriors!
Where people,
come out and play! Yeah.
Yeah, where people got out, and I was waiting for Trey Gowdy to do that. Actually... I was because that really was that's our political podcast.
That's our political podcast.
There's also a big slice of Kurt Russell Escape from New York in there.
Yeah, you know, you got that exactly right.
Yeah.
This is a ripoff of Warriors and Escape from New York, and it's the Bronx Warriors is what it's called, because you were at the meeting for this movie.
Yeah. Formerly called the New York Metropolitans.
Too.
Yeah.
And the person they're talking about is the ogre, not yogurt.
Oh,
so
see.
We're clear.
Okay, that threw me.
All right, try this one. This is one you might know, actually. I'm guessing that you might get this one.
Okay.
Number five.
If you'll get down from your pulpit for 1 minute, I'd like to ask you why Washington is so silent about all this. Or do you know more about it than the government?
It would not be the first time Washington has kept the truth from the public, whether it be flying saucers or Gamera.
Oh, so now you believe in flying saucers, along with 200-feet turtles that survive atomic bomb explosions.
Well, since they refer to Gamera in the actual dialogue, I'm going to have to guess that it was probably Gamera.
Gamera.
Yeah.
Which 1965, Godzilla's little brother.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like all Godzilla movies except for several of the ones made in this country.
Yeah.
Because they're just joyfully cheesy, but yeah.
Dogface Herman says, this clip comes from the American release that has new scenes.
Oh, okay.
Of Americans talking about what is happening, just like the first Godzilla movie.
And pop quiz, who was the American in the most notable American who was cut into the first Godzilla movie to make it relevant?
It wasn't Leslie Nielsen.
No, it was Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr.
It was it was Ironsides. It was Perry Mason.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
wow.
And specifically to distribute to the United States, the original Godzilla still is an awesome movie. And the minute they got the roar correct,
yeah.
And just the size and scale of what this thing was, made it's immortal. It's the greatest monster ever. It's the king of the monsters. So.
All right. So thank you, Dogface Tournament, for those. I have a question for you, Drew Glass.
Yes.
I have been streaming through Person of Interest because all the right people like Person of Interest.
Okay.
This TV show. And you watched a couple episodes with me.
I did.
Is it science fiction?
Yeah.
It is.
By definition, it is. It's a magical machine, which the person involved describes as an impenetrable black box, as I recall.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
That knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it has people in it who have superhuman gifts, almost.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And it's in the sense that Minority Report is science fiction.
Okay. Okay.
The gimmick is predicting the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been... and actually, Robert Heinlein's first big story when he was writing short stories, the one that I think jumped right off the page was called Timeline, I think, which was about predicting when you're going to die, when every person.
Oh, right.
The ability to predict when everyone's going to die. So the idea of predicting, of traveling to the past, in a way that lets you control events, or predicting the future and taking action that lets you control events, is a very old one.
Yeah.
And the gimmick here is not a magic stone or a prophet or a soothsayer, but it's a machine.
It's a computer. It's a computer.
Definitely science.
And I am to the point in season three. Season one, I mean, everyone's written about this, but season one is just strict police procedural and getting to know the characters. Season two gets a little more interesting. Season three gets really interesting. And I am to the point of season three where a major character is no more. And that's all I'm going to say.
They were needed.
You can definitely do a drinking game with this show.
They were needed on another show.
They were needed on another show. That will tell you everything you need to know. That's a spoiler right there. Uh-huh. And the drinking game for this show.
Oh yeah.
The plots are different, and they're introducing all kinds of new stuff to this. But maybe there'll be some rival computers and so forth. And there's a fourth season out on DVD now, too. So I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to stick with this. But because it seems like it's going to start to get really complicated all of a sudden.
Well, it really occupies the same, broadly speaking, the same universe and in the same city as Mr. Robot.
Yeah, it does. And New York City is definitely a character in this story, like Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. But in terms of originality of script, from one script to another, I mean, each episode of Mr. Robot is like a movie. It's like an original, separate, I mean, it's serialized, but it is like a film.
You can't recommend it highly enough. And they're distinct and unique.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just a gorgeous, beautifully rendered, smart show.
Well, and part of the difference is Mr. Robot did how many episodes? 10?
Yeah.
Person of Interest does 23 episodes a season.
Well, and Mr. Robot was a movie.
Yeah,
script.
It was.
That ran long.
Yep.
So the entire arc of that first part of the story was worked out. Now, I'm not saying that isn't true for Person of Interest. Person of Interest is a lot more what USA Network would put
commercial.
On 5 years ago.
Well, and they are not given the liberty to go an hour and 7 minutes long.
Exactly.
Their episodes are 44 minutes long, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, but for standard TV fare, I think Person of Interest is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
The third season is really something. And
like Babylon 5, there's a significant portion of the first part of the show you can just skip.
Yeah. If you want to watch a few episodes of the earlier seasons just to get an idea of who these characters are and how the plot unfolds.
Do what I did. Step right into season three and have Blue Gal sitting there going, okay, who's
okay,
this person?
This guy
What's
is.
Their
and
thing?
This guy is.
Oh. And you can catch up with Blue Gal there holding your hand. You can catch up pretty quickly and understand where it's going. And I got to say, by the second episode that I watched, I was doing some end guessing that was
You were, because it's like you say, the plots are not, there's a lot of repetition.
Yeah. And there's a lot of
what these characters do and how the jokes go. And
it rests comfortably inside of its genre.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Mr. Robot doesn't have a genre.
Right. That's the difference.
Yeah.
And so for genre TV, this is good genre
it's
TV.
It's very competent, very good.
And it's got Jim Caviezel. Caviezel.
Jesus. Jesus.
He says in one of the gag reels, he says, "Don't forget, I'm Jesus and I can play tricks on you." So.
And it has Henry Gale, who's not Henry Gale, from Lost.
Yes.
He's
the nerd. He's the inventor of the computer. And the nerd who is somehow in touch with the computer, but also not.
Through a very
complicated... computer has a mind of its own, too. Yeah. So, that's the character.
There's a lot of cryptic, you'll have to guess what the computer means kind of thing.
Yeah, computer gives out, it is a lot like Minority Report in that the computer releases an identity each week, and you have to guess, or they have to guess, the characters have to figure out, is this person of interest,
right,
a victim of a crime or a perpetrator of a crime?
Right.
And that flips on itself throughout the plot sometimes.
And if you, it, a little bit like, I forget the name of the TV series, Special Edition or something like that, where you get tomorrow's paper today.
Yeah.
And that was actually shot in Chicago, shot several episodes, shot right outside the college where I used to work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we just sort of shut the place down and watched them shoot the episodes, which is really cool and very useful to the people who learn how to make movies. But Special Edition, I think. Early edition. But the reason the information is released cryptically is because the person who designed the computer didn't want anybody digging in and using the information in a way that's – so it kind of makes sense – inside of its own plot. It's not ridiculous that it's this way. It's by design. So, okay, I can go with that. I can go with that the person who built it built a failsafe so that you can't get any more information out of this thing than you need, because this computer literally encompasses all information and would be, you know, terrifyingly dangerous if anybody actually got inside of it, because they would be a god.
Yep. Yep. Well, thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure, Blue Guy. That was fun. I thank you, Dog Face Herman. You really, I got to see your archives one of these days. They have got to run on like the warehouse at the end of Indiana Jones.
He really is something. You know, I think he has a big archive in his head and he goes and gets these, but it's really quite impressive. Quite impressive. And I know that Bloggenfreude right now is biting his knuckles and saying, I can't wait to tell you what happens in season 4 of Person of Interest. He's one of – he and John Amato are the two people who, you know, when the right people like a show, you go and check it out. And those two are the guys who said, oh, Person of Interest, so cool. So, yeah, I think it is worth your time if you have time.
It is not going to blow your socks off. Like,
but some of the plot twists in it are pretty good. Yeah, and for standard fare, it is worth your while. All right. Thank you, Driftglass. I love you.
I love you too, baby. Bye.
Bye.